Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Terry. I'm going to do a talk on intimacy. My son, Zach, when I first asked, because the subject of relationships and intimacy, I have no idea necessarily what to say. So what do you tell people about relationships and intimacy? He said, well, and he thinks about it. He said, well, tell them that hugs and kisses wouldn't hurt. Well, I can't improve on that. So let's close in prayer. So why am I here? I am here because I hear there's a new opening in the church. Just so you know, I applied, along with two very qualified women. Whoops. Some of you are wondering, because I get grief, and first time you've ever heard me speak, don't worry, sometime during the 90 minutes I will offend someone. Because we take ourselves way too seriously, yes? We really do. And some people get in my face about it, and because one person, I do Lenten missions, and I'm at Catholic parishes, or I'm at Catholic universities, or I'm at Catholic retreat centers doing retreats, and sometimes I'll say something that'll be just a little bit off. And so one time, this lady just recently, just in my face, she says, "You're not even Catholic." I said, "No, ma'am, I'm Episcopalian." She said, "Well, then what do you know?" I said, "Well, for starters, I know that you could use a little more roughage in your diet." I am Episcopalian. My spiritual director is a Benedictine. And my publisher is Loyola, which is Jesuit. And I teach Franciscan theology. I don't know what I am, except a child of God. And so we'll start there. I am delighted to be here. There's this couple that they were engaged to be married. And they got hit. This is a sad story. They got hit by a semi-truck and they died. So they're at the pearly gates and St. Peter says, "Welcome." And they said, "Thanks, but you know, here's the deal, St. Peter, we were in love and we were about to get married. So now I'm just wondering, can we get married in heaven?" St. Peter said, "I don't know." He's Irish. He said, "But I'll check." And so 3 hours later, he comes back and he says to them, "Good news, yes." "Oh," they said, "that's great." They were Irish too. They said, well, now we're thinking, you know, eternity's a long time. What if it doesn't work out between us? Can we get divorced in heaven?" St. Peter said, "Look, it took me 3 hours to find a priest." "If you need a lawyer, that's like a week and a half. First thing you need to know, if you've never heard me speak, is that you're going to spend some time talking to the people around you. Those of you who've heard me over the years, you already know that, and you sat next to people that you already like. If you're sitting next to someone you don't really care for, this will be a very long day for you, especially given that the topic is intimacy. And your first assignment is to find the two or three people around you, because you're going to chat with them and say hello. And the best way to greet them is just to say, "Is it the lighting in the arena, or have you always been this good looking?" So say hello to your group. Yeah, the middle-aged thing. These are new, so I'm getting used to these. These are real glasses. I haven't had to use real glasses before. So this is the first time that I've ever spoken at Congress where I can see the audience. And you are a good-looking group. What is real? Asked the rabbit. When they were lying side by side at the nursery fender waiting for Nana to come and tidy up the room. Does it mean having things that buzz inside you or stick out handle? "Nah," said the skin horse. "Real isn't how you're made, you become. When someone loves you, not just to play with, but really loves you, you become real." "Does it hurt?" asked the rabbit. "Oh yes," said the skin horse. "Sometimes it hurts a lot. But when you're real, you don't mind being hurt." "Does it happen all at once?" or bit by bit? Oh, it doesn't happen all at once, said the skin horse. It takes a long, long time. And that's why it doesn't happen to people who have to be real carefully kept, and people who are sharp on the edges, and people who break real easy, because by the time you're real, most of your hair has been loved off. And you get loose and shabby in all your joints. But when you're real, it really doesn't matter what people think of you. It just matters what happens on the inside. The rabbit sighed. He wanted this thing called real to happen to him. But the idea of losing his hair and his whiskers and getting loose and shabby was rather sad. He wanted to be real without all the messy stuff happening. So we start there. This is a difficult subject, even the word alone, intimacy, relationships. And the problem is, Einstein said this, you can never fix a problem using the same technology that got us in trouble in the first place. So first thing we have to unpack is what we brought to the room relative to the words even, and our assumption as a technological society that we say, okay, intimacy and relationships, no problem. Tell us what to do about them. If we have a list, we'll go fix it. We're like 4-year-old children 5 minutes out of the driveway. Are we there yet? Are we done now? And then we can solve the problem. But we begin with this assumption. Are you ready for this? Whatever we're going to say today about intimacy and relationships, it begins with this unequivocal reality. It will be messy. You know why? Because it's between people. And the wonderful irony of that is that in the middle of the mess or the chaos or the difficulty or the misunderstanding, in the middle of all that, that the light shines. But we don't give ourselves permission because we run around it looking for answers. Are we there yet? So we begin. It's even so insidious that some of you are thinking, okay, with relationships, I could use a little work, but we're afraid to admit about the work we need, and you're thinking that the person sitting next to you already has their act together. And so you're afraid to share in your group because what will they think? So here's the truth. The first truth is that they're just as screwed up as you are. So you can smile at them now knowingly. Welcome to the club. I mean, that's with me. They give, right, you know that old commercial, give it to Mikey, he'll eat it. Well, in Congress, the truth about intimacy, give it to Terry, he'll do it. Like, I don't know, which is where we have to start. The permission to say, I don't know. Charlie Brown at the psychiatrist. That's Lucy, yes? Lucy charges a nickel. That would be nice. Life, Charlie Brown. She's waxing eloquent. Life, Charlie Brown, is like a deck chair. Like a what? He's like a deck chair. Haven't you ever been on a cruise ship, Charlie Brown? There are hundreds of deck chairs, and some people take their deck chair and they put it at the front of the ship so they can see where they're going. Some people take their deck chair and they put it at the rear of the ship so they can see where they've been. On the cruise ship of life, Charlie Brown, which way is your deck chair facing? Charlie Brown said, I haven't figured out how to get mine unfolded yet. Can we begin there? Is that okay? I wrote this down, and the reason I wrote it down is because, I'll be honest with you, there's a part of me that had some nice pithy things to say about relationships and intimacy. But then I realized that they were just words on a page. So then I asked myself this question, if I really want to practice what I preach and admit that my deck chair is still hard to get unfolded, am I willing to bring that, Terry, to this stage? So I'll read the words. Well, we will be tempted to go cerebral on this subject as if we can comprehend all of this, and that will take care of it. I can tell you that I really don't know the answers to some of these questions, speaking of the mystery. Here's what you need to know about me. I've been married 3 times. Intimacy isn't paint by number. It's not nice and neat. And here's the other truth. Intimacy has really nothing to do with marriage. It is diving into the deep end of life where there will be more mystery than knowing. And in that mystery, we will make connections. And some of those connections will be unnerving, but absolutely essential. And when we do make those connections, whether we have known the person for 50 years or 10 minutes, Those connections are literally a slice of heaven. Even so, we give ourselves so much grief after most conversations or encounters that we didn't do it correctly, or we didn't do it enough, or we need some way to feel diminished. And when we do that and give ourselves so much grief, we miss the very kiss of God. If you came to this workshop for answers, I'm not your man. But I'll tell you this, I know when I'm honest about my fears, I'm close to the truth. So that's my commitment to you, and that's what I plan to do today. And I know that when I pretend I have answers, I have one more layer between me and the experience of life. And loving and living life fully can cost a lot, but not loving will cost a whole lot more. Are you ready for the journey with me? Three times, really, Terry? Wow. They say to me, how do you know this one will last? I used to give them an answer, you know, like I knew. Like I said, you know, I used to say, well, I know more about marriage, which is not true. And then I used to say, I know more about women. my new book is called What Every Man Needs to Know About Women. It's really thick and in several languages. Follow-up book is What Every Woman Needs to Know About Men, and it's empty. I believe that everybody in this room would like some relationships in their life to be healthy. Is that fair? I believe that everybody in this room would like to have some place where they feel safe, yes? Some place where they can bring who they are without being prejudged. Some place where someone can be honest with them, and that honesty may be painful or sting for a little while, but you know that the intent is in love, yes? Or maybe there's a place that you want to be where there can be give and take, or there's a place you want to be where you can sit silently and it will be okay. Because you know that that holding place is real. We want this? Every single one of us want this, and yet every single one of us make choices and decisions and behaviors that lead us away from the very things I just said we wanted. This is what I say I want, and yet my behaviors tell me, see, the truth is, and I'll start with this, I say I want intimacy, but you know what? What I really want probably is just security. So let's dive into the deep end there. When you even heard the phrase intimacy, we're talking about intimacy and passion and relationships, that's in the title. When you even hear that concept of a healthy relationship, some words come to your mind. There's a list that you want to experience when you have a relationship that is healthy. Is that true? Your first assignment with your group is to make that list. What does a healthy relationship look like? What are the non-negotiables to make that relationship healthy, to make that relationship real, to make that relationship intimate? What are the non-negotiables for that relationship? And now this is, you're saying, wow, we have to dive into the deep end really quick here. All right, here's the deal, and I tell everyone this who's heard me speak before, if you do, some of you say, hey, listen, Terry, I didn't come to this talk for me. I'm here to take notes for someone that really needs it. So if you don't want to share personally, because it's going to be even more personal than this, do the next best Christian thing, and that's talk about someone who is not here. Because that's what we do at my parish. We never call it gossip, do we? What do we call it, Cindy? Prayer concerns, that's right. Non-negotiables for what would be a healthy relationship or intimacy. All right, make a list with your, or just pick one person in your group and say, God sent me here to really help you. Make your list, go for it. Do you have a list started? Someone shout out a word of something on that list. Trust. Honesty, trust, loyalty, empathy, open, acceptance, laughter, trusting, forgiveness. These are great words, yes? Say again. Patience. You notice a woman said that. You read the comics, Kathy, some of you? Remember when Kathy dated Irving for the longest time? And they're going along, and Irving says, "I don't get it, Kathy. One day you're so independent and aloof like you don't even care. The next day you won't let me out of your sight. The next day you demand a commitment. The next day you won't let me near you. The next day you're completely needy and clingy. The next day you tell me to get lost. What are you trying to do to me, Kathy?" She said, "I'm eliminating your need to go out with a lot of different women." That's a great list, by the way, and I love that list. Here's the problem with that list, is that we make that list, and I have to ask the question, because I just said we make choices and decisions. Honesty and trust always shows up on the list. Here's the problem with that, and let's be honest about it. Yeah, you and I have a relationship. It's a great relationship, but you know what? What I really want us to have is honesty. Really? I mean, really? If that's really what I want, then why is it when she's honest with me, that's not exactly what I had in mind? Right? Oh, how about this one? All of you that said honesty is so important. We say honesty is so important. How many of you are in any kind of relationship and you needed to be honest with that person, but you didn't, you waited a day? And then you waited a week. Right? And then you decided, I don't need to. But we really want honesty, don't we? And you know what? Our relationship is really great, but I think trust is important. Trust is really important, okay? I want you to start. And with us, I think it's a great relationship. I think empathy is a big deal, and forgiveness, both of them, right? Right. And then when she is empathetic or forgiving, I say, that's all you got? We say we want these things, and yet we make choices and decisions and behaviors that lead us away from what we want. Do you see the struggle already? And we think we can circumvent it by simply, all right, so here's your second question. I told you it was going to get more and more personal. Because we're afraid of the very things we just put on that list. And some of you are going to push back and say, afraid, I'm not afraid. That's not my problem. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. That's not my problem. I'm not afraid. Everybody else is afraid. I'm not afraid. In fact, I'm too honest. That's my problem. I'm too honest. You know people like that, don't you? They tell you everything you never asked them to say. And they call that honesty. I call it emotional vomiting. Okay, then don't use the word afraid. How about cautious? I'm not making this stuff up. This started a long time ago. There was an old book. It's called Genesis. Have you heard of it? Right? God said, Adam, where are you? And then he ticked off the list. I want to have a relationship with you, honest and trusting and forgiving and loyal and empathetic. I want to have that with you, Adam. Adam, where are you? And what did Adam say? I'm over here hiding. Right? Eve, remember Adam and Eve? We wanted to have this relationship. It has all these words on it, Eve. Well, that's interesting. If that's what I want with you, Eve, then why are you the one I'm putting down the most? It began in Genesis. I say I want these things, and yet the very person I say I want this with, they're the ones I stab first. What am I afraid of? What are we cautious about? And we immediately walk into this going like this, don't we? I told you we dive into the deep end. Because I'll tell you what, if we don't dive into the deep end, it's not worth having this talk. So, discussion number two. Go back to that list. What are some of the reasons that we are cautious about? What are some of the reasons that we put up barriers? What are some of the reasons that like Charlie Brown, he had remember that girl he was always sweet on, but he could never introduce himself to her? Sally. No, that's his sister. The red-haired girl. Thank you. See, I've already had one of those moments. The red-haired girl. And he was going to buy her a Valentine's present, and he was going to have it, and she was saying, do you want it wrapped? And he said, yeah, you can wrap it, but it doesn't have to be really nice because I won't have the courage to give it to her anyway. So it's okay to start there. Discussion number two, what are some of the reasons we're afraid of the very things we're about to talk about today? Go for it. Or just point to somebody and say, you start first on this one, yeah. I'd just like to hear a couple of these. Raise your hand so that you can tell me. Anybody have one of these things we're afraid of? Rejection. Not being reciprocated. Not knowing what you want. Insecure. Fear. Age. Did you say age? Pain. Did you? Oh. You don't think I take this age thing personally, do you? Did you say age? You young people don't get it. You just wait. Where was I? We have to do a paradigm shift here. We have to do a reframe here because I have this desire to have this relationship, and all of those things are vitally important to me, and yet I push away from them with the very people I say I want them from. Is that not true? That just happens, including my relationship with God. It's the same kind of deal. I say I want to have this relationship, but I don't want to be consumed by God's love. I don't believe I've earned it. Or I don't believe that he's going to even trust the kind of prayers I've offered. Or if I'm willing to shout out and say, where have you been? Then maybe he'll say, hey, I'll cross you off the list. So we do this in all of our relationships, and here's how we circumvent it. We say, okay, yes, I want honesty with you, and I want trust with you, and I want empathy and forgiveness with you. And so then you realize, you know what? Relationships are not that big of a deal. You just get together the people you have trouble with, send them to Congress. Get them fixed. That's exactly the paradigm we have in this culture. You do not believe me? People come to me and say, I have a relationship problem. Fine. Then why does the next sentence start with the word he or she? Think about that just for a minute. I have a relationship problem. Let me tell you about them. In fact, when we have a relationship problem, we go to the bookstore on 10 easy steps to understand difficult people. True? All right, fundamental to everything I'm going to say after this is that intimacy has little to do with the other person. I'll say it again. Intimacy has little to do with the other person, which means intimacy begins where? See, now this is the truth I really didn't want to hear. It's much easier to find somebody who's going to make me okay, or if my dysfunction is the other way around, it's much easier for me to find somebody and fix them. We don't live in a world that has relationships. We take hostages. We should even ask people, not are you in a relationship now, but who are you fixing today? Because the assumption, I mean, I was raised, some of you know this, I was raised Baptist. I was raised in a small town in Michigan called Colon, C-O-L-O-N, Colon. There is very little self-esteem in a town called Colon. I'm not making this up, by the way. Google it. I was raised in a Baptist church. They don't think when they name things. The name of the church was the Association of Regular Baptists from Colon. I was raised in a church, and here's the message I got about this talk of intimacy, relationships, and passion. It was basically this. When God created you, God created one more person somewhere on the planet just for you. And your job in life is to locate that sucker. And God's job is to play hide and seek with them until you finally met them and you say, where have you been all my life? Right? You got 20 years just to catch up on here because I need her to make me okay. Intimacy begins here. Intimacy has little to do with the other person. That's how we open. That's our opening. And I'm going to give you four steps for that process. First of all, what do you think about the statement? Intimacy has little to do with the other person. True? Yes or no? Yes. Intimacy begins here. This is your discussion for your group. Go for it. Intimacy begins here. What does that mean to you? Have at it.
Yes, sir.
So we're going to shift the paradigm. The paradigm is that intimacy is not something I don't really, because I've already discovered this personally, you can never marry enough of the right women. See, Episcopalians, we're the married kind of priests, but we believe in monogamy. It's just serial monogamy. As long as I believe that intimacy is something outside of me, I'm waiting for someone else to make me okay. Here's the deal, and you can go to the bank on it. If you don't bring it with you, you're not going to find it there. Let me say it again. If you don't bring it with you, you're not going to find it there. And yet, what do we do in all of our relationship encounters? We infer that the other person makes us something we're not, yes? We even use that language, you make me so mad. Right? You make me whatever it is. So the implication is, it has nothing to do with any of the choices that I have made or responsibilities that I take. It's about something you have to do differently so that I can. And so the other part of that then, especially in this culture of coupling where we assume that the end all and be all, and don't get me wrong, I am a huge fan of people who have been married for the longest time and they're extraordinarily devoted and they want to make that. That is a powerful thing. I spend a lot of time with Engage Encounter and I do many of their conferences so that they have this kind of foundation to create a relationship that's not on false expectations. But we have to expand the horizon, because what happens is, as long as I assume that someone else is going to make me okay, then what am I doing with friends? We think of friends as people to spend time with when there isn't anyone else around who really matters. And as long as we have a vacancy in our life for a lover or a spouse, we spend all of our energy trying to fill that vacancy instead of enjoying the people who are in our life today. So I want us to back away from this. I mean, we even the language of intimacy, because we equate it to just coupling, or we equate it to just marriage. Or even, this one lady said to me, says she's dating this guy, and I said, that's great. And she said, we're dating, but we haven't been intimate yet. Would someone translate that for me, please? In the arena, I just wanted to hear the word sex shouted out several times. Somebody's just walking in going, whoa. Okay, then let's be honest. Let's be honest. Just think of what we do with our language there, right? We haven't been intimate yet, meaning we haven't had sex yet. Really? Really? That I can only have compassion and trust and forgiveness and empathy and honesty. I can only have those things when our genitals touch. Isn't that special? Because we haven't given ourselves the freedom and permission to realize that this begins in a different way. It starts here, and it's what I bring to each and every relationship. And in the male psyche, sometimes we'll actually use sex to circumvent intimacy, because it keeps us from having to talk. Well, you want truth? So intimacy begins here. Four things. You ready? Number one. Oh, if intimacy begins here, and if you're writing things, write these three things down, because the first thing is, if I don't bring it with me, I'm not going to find it there. This is a very important thing. Whether it's a relationship I have with a significant other or a partner, whether it's a relationship I have with my child, whether it's a relationship I have with a friend, whether it's a relationship I have with God, I've got to ask, what am I bringing here? Rather than, what am I expecting them to do for me? That's number one. The second thing I want you to remember, if it begins here, is I can never take someone to a place that they are not willing to go. Can I repeat that? I can never take someone to a place that they are not willing to go. Many of us go to these wonderful seminars about all of these things. We go back to our relationship, and we assume that just because we know these things, we can take them there. Third, I can never take someone to a place just because I want to go there. That's important to know. I can never take someone to a place just because I want to go there. But it's significant to know that that shouldn't prevent me from still practicing the very thing I say I want. Does that make sense? Just because I can't make them someone that they are not doesn't mean I can't practice the very things I say I want to experience here. And the fourth thing is, just because they don't practice these things, these words on this list in the same way I do, doesn't mean that there's a lack of desire in their heart. You'll hear more about this when I tell the story about my father. So here's my 4 points for today. Number one, if you really want to do this, that intimacy begins from the inside, if you really want to live this way, number one, this is going to hurt. Would you like to skip that one? I love that. She said, bring it on. That's Catholic for amen. Does it hurt? Asked the rabbit. Sometimes it hurts a lot, but when you're real, you don't mind being hurt. As soon as we experience the pain thing, stop with me on this. As soon as we experience any kind of pain, any kind of disconnect, or any kind of misunderstanding, as soon as there's a fracture in some way, as soon as there's that goes on, we assume that that's a detriment to the possibility of having those things on that list. Trust, honesty. And so we try to get rid of it, don't we? We try to eliminate the pain rather than understanding that that's a part of the journey. I was raised in a dysfunctional home, which is really a funny thing to say in the United States. I was raised in a dysfunctional family. As if there's a normal family out there screwing up the curve. I'm an adult child of an alcoholic, and I remember when I was 10, I'm the first of five children, I remember when I was 10 having a picture in my head about what my father would be like. And without even knowing it, they included a lot of the words that you just put on your list. Here's the problem. I had a picture in my head, and then there was my real dad. And they were not the same. So do you know what I did? I spent all of my energy. See, because I was a good Baptist kid, a good Christian kid, so I prayed to God. You know what? I brought God into this collusion. I prayed to God to change my dad. Because here's what happens if I assume intimacy begins outside of me. I start all of the sentences about relationship issues in my life with these two words, if only. And I said to myself, have you ever done this? If only my dad were, if only he would understand, if only he would talk, if only he would listen, if only, then we would have a great relationship. Then it would be real. Then it would matter. Then it could be like some of those other kids I see that have real relationships with their dad instead of the one I have. Well, by the time I got to college, my dad hadn't changed. So I'll be honest with you, now I'm pissed off, seriously. Not just at my dad, but at God too. Why? Because he didn't change my dad, did he? The lessons I'm talking about today, I learned the hard way, and so this was my late 30s, early 40s, when I finally realized that intimacy begins where? If I don't bring it with me, I'm not going to what? Find it there. So I said, am I willing to practice what I preach? I went to Michigan. My father still lives in Michigan. Father's still very much alive. I went to visit my father, as I do a couple times a year, and I got off the plane. And even then, I'm thinking to myself that this new dad's going to greet me. Even then. And we sat down at an old picnic table and had some ice cream at this place. Have any of you ever had a conversation with a loved one, but you rehearsed that conversation in your head for like 6 years? This is one of those. Anyway, the first sentence out of my mouth, I screwed up 6 years worth of rehearsal. So now I'm feeling guilty. And I'm 10 years old again. I'm sorry, Dad. I'm sorry, Dad. Jesus, I'm sorry, Dad. Gosh, Dad, I'm sorry. Come on, Dad. Dad, chill. Just chill. Because my father's angry. He didn't have to tell me he was angry. He was angry. I'm sorry, Dad. Jeez, Dad. Okay. And then we were silent, we ate ice cream, that was okay. And then we talked about the Detroit Tigers, that's baseball, that was okay. And then we talked about farming, that's what you do, that's okay. Then we talked about construction, that's what my dad does for a living, he's a brick mason, that was okay. And then I talked to him why I'd been going to therapy and what anger had been doing to some of the key relationships of my life. And that one kind of didn't work so well. Have you ever had a conversation where you had a sentence in mind, but halfway through the sentence you're thinking, this wasn't exactly the way I wanted to say it? And then there's a response, and you're thinking, wait a minute, we're missing one another here. And through the entire conversation, this is the point. The point is, at the end of 30 minutes, do you know what I felt? Because we did this sort of back and forth, and he's not getting the whole picture, and I'm bringing something to him, and this all of this stuff is going on. At the end of 30 minutes, do you know what I felt? I felt guilty. Why? Because I give lectures on this stuff. I write books on this stuff, and I don't even know how to talk to my dad. That's the lie. And that's the lie that I want to tell you about, because the assumption is that I can only experience intimacy or passion or relationship, that I can only experience forgiveness, or I can only experience trust, or I can only experience empathy, or I can only experience honesty. I can only experience those things with my dad if the conversation is perfect. I can only experience it if everything is scripted. I can only experience if he has the exact response that he should have according to my script. That's the only way it will work. And so I was scared to death, and here's the deal. I was scared to death just to be ordinary with my dad, just to be Terry with my dad, just to screw up. So I figured that was a failure. And we even use that language when we talk about relational encounters. We say that was a waste of time. So I figured, I'm not going to go there again. A year later, we're driving down the road in my dad's pickup truck, and my dad and I can drive for miles without speaking to each other. My father's not even looking at me, because I figured this was a long-gone conversation. My father's not even looking at me. He's looking out the window. And my father said this. He said, "Your grandpa used to beat me pretty good." Here's what I realized for the first time, that my father was 10 years old, too. My father was 10 years old, too. No, he doesn't have the skills and the language that his son has. No, he doesn't have the framework for doing the kind of intentional conversations that his son is skilled at doing. But I needed to give him the permission to come to the conversation as a 10-year-old child. And the second thing I needed to do was make a space, literally make a liturgical, sacramental space where we could hold even that messy conversation and say, you know what? It was real. It was real. And when I run past all of those, I miss the opportunity to celebrate the Spirit of God in a bawdy, messy, transformational encounter. Now, is my father like I want him to be in the picture? No. But I had a choice with my dad. I could either accept that picture of my dad and tear my dad up, or I could learn to accept my dad and tear the picture up and work on it from there. It's going to hurt. But that's okay, because that's where the light gets in. I had a single mom, after hearing the story about my dad, she said, you know what? Single parents, any single parents in the room? Give them a hand. Toughest job in the world. She had teenagers, you know, the kind that don't really speak to you, but they still eat your food. And here's the deal. She had a 16-year-old son, and she and her son were like this. And so what is her assumption about herself? I'm doing something wrong. I'm screwing up. So I need to go learn the right skills, yes? And here's what happened. So her son, she decided one thing she would do with the garage is keep her car out of the garage. Her son loved music, and so her son had a group of guys, and they were a band, and they used the garage to practice. And so one day, the band is out there practicing, and she said, I don't know what came over me one day, but I just looked out the garage door, and nobody was at the keyboard, and she happened to be a good pianist, so she said, I went out there, sat down, and began to jam with them on the keyboard for 20 minutes or so. And she said, and after it was over, the guys just said, okay, we're headed to the mall or wherever. She's used to her son being either sullen or saying nothing. And on the way out the door, her son literally slammed her in the shoulder with his hand, bam, like this, and said, Mom, I didn't know it, but you're pretty good. And she said, here's what you need to know, is that story got buried in all the other stuff in my life, and I never gave myself the permission or freedom to celebrate it. Because we have these wonderful moments of intimacy, just those very words we talk about, that enter into our life, but they don't enter into them in the script in which we've laid out. And so we don't give ourselves permission to celebrate it. Can you relate to any of that? I told you we'd dive in the deep end. Guess what? It's time to talk to your group. It can hurt, but it's okay, because in the middle of that, we can celebrate those moments where connections are made, even if they're not what? Perfect. Some of you are saying, you know what? You're doing the if only thing already. You're saying, if only I had a different group. All right, talk to your group for a minute. That was great. Someone just said to me, what was the question? Because if there's a question, there must be a right answer. That's true, though. That's the way we do things. And we try to do that even with the intimacy stuff. There's a great story about a boy, his cat died. And so, you know, the dad's got to explain it to the cat to the boy about the cat, and we want to do this right, don't we? See, we want to do this correctly. Even when we go back to have these conversations with people we love, we want to do this intimacy thing correctly. Right? So you're saying, well, here's the thing, Timmy. We'll get a different cat. All right, here's the thing, Timmy. Your cat was old. This is not working. The answers he's coming up with. And then he realized, oh, I got it. Tippy, the cat. Tippy is with Jesus. The little boy said, what's Jesus going to do with a dead cat? Your discussion was, can you relate to any of those stories? I just realized the time. I know we have to do intimacy, but we're in a hurry. Spoken like a man. My son, when he was 10 years old, he was a fan of NASCAR, and which is strange because you don't know where your kids get these things, right? We don't have NASCAR in Seattle, so. But he was following NASCAR, and he would collect the little NASCAR things, and. So these are the conversations you don't want to have as a parent, because Mark Martin used to drive a car, the number 6 car, still does, but his, you know, the cars are painted with the sponsor. And his sponsor used to be?
Viagra.
It's true. So that's the car going around the track. So my son's got the little race car, a 10-year-old boy, so he comes to his mother. Mommy, what is Viagra? She said, honey, that's the car that keeps going around the racetrack after the race is over. It's going to hurt. The second thing that I want to say is, and that's okay, because here's why. See, if you can say that out loud, then we don't have to pretend with one another, because the trouble with the hurting part and the pain part is that we're afraid to share that it hurts, and so we even do this, and we do this especially in church with one another, you know? Oh, yeah, I used to struggle with that, but not anymore. Oh, really? When did you quit struggling? About an hour ago. So we just make stuff up. Because we're scared to death to say, you know what, this is not easy, this is tough, this is hard, I don't know what to do. But then, in the middle of that, we can be like that single mom, or we can be like my dad and I at the ice cream table, and we can realize in the middle of that not knowing, in the middle of that mystery, the Spirit of God is still alive and well, and if we're open to taking the gifts that are happening in those exchanges, even those fractured exchanges, even those changes that go off script, if we're open to that, then we're open to the possibility of change and reconciliation. We're open to all of that, even if it never works itself out. Why? Because now it's authentic. Second thing is, lead with your heart. Trust your heart. And because intimacy begins where? That means that I can walk into this encounter. This is really important. Now I can walk into this encounter with the courage of knowing I'm not here needing you to make me something I'm not. You can clap for that. That's true. Which also means, and this is really important, if I have the courage to do that, then I have the courage to say no to some relationships that I know are toxic and demeaning and cruel. And there are some of us that put ourselves in relationships because we're afraid that we could. No is a complete sentence. And it is a loving sentence. And it's okay to say that that relationship, this relationship, this encounter has demeaned my spirit and my soul. And I'm going to take ownership and responsibility for that. But no, and that's because I feel like I have a responsibility to fix it. Well, if I lead with my heart, that means I have to learn how to, wait a minute, what was one of the first words you used for relationships? What was it? Trust. Ooh, that means I have to trust this heart. I have to trust this heart. Some of you know the story about a tribe in Africa. This is a true story. Like the one pastor said, I'm not preaching now, this part's true. There's this tribe in Africa, and they have this belief that when a woman is bearing child, they have the belief that God has actually given this child a song. I mean, literally, its own song. And what the woman does is for the 9 months of her pregnancy, her job is to listen to God to learn the song of the child she carries. And when she learns the song for the child she carries that God has given her, she teaches it to the village. And when that child is brought into the world, do you know what the villagers do? They gather around that hut, and what do? Sing them their song. And when that child goes through transitions in their life, the villagers gather around and sing them their song. Oh, and there's one more time when that child gets older and that child messes up and that child does some things that are not necessarily wise or smart. Before they punish the child, before they berate the child, they sit the child in the middle of a circle and they gather around and they sing them their song. See, intimacy doesn't begin with a list of things that you need to do to make the relationship work. Intimacy begins with this question, and it's the first question I ask anybody that comes to me that says, I have a relationship problem. My first question is, okay, fine, tell me one thing you did this week that was just for you. And what do they answer? What does this have to do with me? So my question is, tell me one time this week you heard your song. And do we give ourselves permission to put ourselves in a place to hear our song? Because when I do, then I enter into an encounter very differently. Because now I can walk into this relationship, and guess what? I don't need to fix you. I don't need to manipulate you. Even better, I don't need to use you. I can walk in with this Terry. You know, and I wish I had more to bring to the table. That's what we tell ourselves. So instead of learning our song, we do the other thing. Some of you have heard me tell the story about my hero, Mr. Rogers. You know Mr. Rogers, yes? Mr. Rogers is in heaven too, as you know. Many of you don't know this, but when Mr. Rogers got to heaven, God greeted Mr. Rogers personally and said, "Welcome to my neighborhood." And he gave him a sweater and some tennis shoes. Fred Rogers was on a subway train in Manhattan, and he was traveling with two people who worked with him for his TV show. And when he got off the train, there were some people who recognized Mr. Rogers. Included in that group was a young mother with her son, who was maybe 5, and the little boy had a lightsaber. Do you know what I mean, lightsaber? Okay, so the little boy was whacking people with his lightsaber. This is what makes us little boys. This is what makes us men. Who am I kidding? I mean, you know, we cover it up. We just put a white ball on a tee and we whack it. But we're always whacking stuff. So he's whacking, and then he's whacking Mr. Rogers, and the mother's trying to get the boy to stop, and he's not stopping. And so she finally just says, "Please, I think it's against the law to kill Mr. Rogers." Fred Rogers does what Fred Rogers does best, which means he ignores the adults. Fred Rogers gets right next to the little fellow on his knees. Someone tell me, why did he get on his knees? Eye level. Nobody can hear what they're saying. It's just whisper, 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 whisper. And that little boy puts away his lightsaber. 45 minutes later, the people who were traveling with Fred Rogers say, what'd you say to the kid? This might come in handy. See, a sensitive parent like me would have said, would you like to live another day? Fred Rogers was sort of taken aback by the question and or surprised, and he said, oh, well, I got down there on my knees, and I looked in his eyes, and I said, hi, my name is Mr. Rogers. I like you. I want to be your friend. What's your name? And the little boy told me his name, and I said, you've got a really nice sword. In fact, that's one of the nicest swords I've ever seen. Did you know that Mr. Rogers has a sword, too? Mine's a big old wood one. And I keep it in here. And every time I feel afraid, and every time I think I need to be stronger, and every time I think people won't like me, I take my sword out. But when I know that I'm loved in here, then I know that I'm strong. And on those days, I put my sword away. I can tell now that I'm looking into your eyes, you're a very loved little boy. Your mother loves you very much. You must be very strong on the inside. And the little boy thinks and says, I guess I can put my sword away today. Intimacy begins there. It's not the list that we need to go through in order to create a relationship more perfect. It's about the willingness to walk into this encounter and say, at least for this moment, I put my sword away. Because now I bring this self to the encounter. It's hard to do because if I bring this self, then that means I might be accepted for this self, and I'd rather be accepted for the one that has the good sword. I remember the very first conversation I had with my spiritual director. I'd never been to a monastery. I didn't know what to expect. I ended up going there, for 10 years, 3 days a week. But, the very first time, I took a friend once, it's out of Vallermo. I took a friend once, and the friend never been to a monastery. So he says to the monks at lunch, what do you guys do here? One of the monks said, we pray. My friend said, no, really. So I'm meeting my spiritual director, and for 30 minutes, we have a conversation. At the end of 30 minutes, I realized this is a weird conversation. And then I recognized why. Because he never once asked me my last name. He never once asked me what I did for a living. He never once asked me where I lived. He never once asked me who I knew. He never once asked me what I'd accomplished. We talked about the food, and we talked about the liturgy of the hours, and we talked about the desert, and we talked about the grounds. And then he looked at me and he said, Terry, this has been great. He said, I like you. And I said, you can't do that to me. You can't just like me. I've got to do something to earn it. Trust the heart. Hear your song. I can put my sword away. I've got a couple more stories. Can you relate to any of that? This is your last chance to talk with your group. So I want you to talk to your group. And the question is, because you know what? The paradigm can be changed if we just change the way we greet one another, because we greet one another by saying, what did you do today? And what we're asking is, what did you accomplish? And when you leave here, they're going to ask, what did you learn? Correct? What did you learn about intimacy? Here's the deal. You tell them this. Tell them that this is the guarantee that after spending an hour and a half with Terry, we can walk up to anybody out there in that exhibit hall and just shake their hand and say, hi there, I'm intimate. And then mess with them and say, care to join me? But we start with that, don't we? What'd you accomplish? What'd you learn? Maybe the question should be, sometime this week, did you hear your song? Sometime this week, did you put your sword away? Henri Nouwen, you know Henri Nouwen? Henri Nouwen, when he was just toward the end of his life, he was doing a mass, and as people were coming forward to receive, the one woman said this, "No, bless me, Father." And so Henri did this. And she said, no, Father, bless me. So he's thinking, okay. And then he did a different blessing. You know, he says, sooner or later, I'll get it right for this woman. And then she said, no, Father, bless me. And then she did this. And Henri said, everyone else in line said, I want one of those blessings too. Trust your heart. It's going to hurt, but trust your heart. In other words, I can walk in because I put my sword away, because I have a song. And now, even if that blessing isn't perfect, we can give that blessing to one another. Is that not true? Last chance with your group. Does any of this make sense? Or just turn to them and say, hey, practice. You can practice for people out there. I'm intimate. All right, 2 minutes. The third thing is we can honor one another, and the fourth thing is that we can give a gift. And by honor one another, I say this. Intimacy begins where? All right, it's something that I bring. Why? And when I bring this to the encounter, I'm bringing what? My song, yes? I'm bringing what God has said about me. Even though I'm fractured and messed up and all those kind of things, even though I have no way of knowing how to negotiate this thing, but I can start with the trust and the realization that I bring this to the encounter. Does that not make a difference? Now, that also means that if I bring it, then I can honor the fact that you too have a song. I can't believe you haven't heard it yet, but you too have a song, so I can honor that. This little boy decided he wanted to go find God, and he realized that, you know, it might take a while, so he had to pack a suitcase. And so he was going to get hungry, so he packed Hostess Twinkies and some root beer. And I'm thinking, when you're hunting for God, that's as good as any. You know, you get to a certain age, you change it to scotch, but. So the boy, this is in New York, and so he's walking, well, it's in Central Park, and so finally he's tired. And he sits down on a bench, and the bench he sits on, there's another older gentleman there, and I mean old. This guy's old, like 60. I don't know, this guy's 80-some, 90-some years old. Anyway, he's there, but he's feeding the pigeons, right? So he sits down, and the little fellow, because the little fellow's dispirited, you know. He's done on this whole journey, and it didn't turn out like he'd planned. So he's sitting there, and he's opens his suitcase because he's hungry, and he's eating Hostess Twinkies and drinking a root beer. And then he realized the older guy was sitting there, and then he said, offered him a Hostess Twinkie and a root beer. And the old man looked at this little boy and smiled, the biggest smile this little boy had ever seen. And the little boy smiled back, and the two of them sat there that afternoon and ate all the Hostess Twinkies and drank all of the root beer. And when they were done, that boy closed his suitcase because it was getting later in the afternoon, and he knew his mother would be worried, and so he began to walk, and he got maybe 20 or 30 yards, and he put that suitcase down, and he ran back, and he gave that man a big old hug. And then he saw a bigger smile than he'd ever seen or thought possible. He went all the way home, and when he walked in, he was smiling and grinning from ear to ear, and his mother, who was worried, said, "What is the matter with you?" Which, of course, is what we do as parents. As soon as a child is in a good mood, we knew something is wrong. And he said, "Mom, I met God today." And he had the biggest smile I've ever seen. At the same time, this gentleman arrived at his home, and his home was the home of his older son. His older son was taking care of him now in the later years of his life. And he was worried about his dad. And so when the dad walked in, the son said, "Hey, where have you been? And what's the smile all about?" And he said, "Son, I met God today. And he's a lot younger than I thought." The reality is, in all of these encounters, which may be messy and may be unpredictable and may not go according to the script, there's going to be a fallback temptation that we want to fix it, that we want to solve it, that we want to have the right answers. But maybe, just maybe, it's okay to do this. Whew. and realize that I bring to this the song that's been given to me, and so that I can be present for whatever is about to be next. And maybe I can receive the gifts that take place even if it's not according to the script I had in mind. One final story. Do I have time for one final story? Because then I'm going to go out to my booth where you're going to buy my book.
And t-shirt.
Actually, I'm not kidding. I want you to know, for those of you who are interested in the material, there's some new CDs, and there's some t-shirts called Born to Dance, which is kind of fun. The other thing is that I do a Monday letter called Sabbath Moment, which is available for you. And the brand new news is that next week I have a new app that's coming out called Daily Pause. So, thank you. So the Daily Pause app, which is basically a reminder for us to stop to hear our song, because we rush past it. Final story. This is a movie that I recommend. It's a documentary called From Mao to Mozart. Mao as in Chairman Mao. And I recommend it. It's about in the late 1960s. Do you know Isaac Stern, the name Isaac Stern, violinist? Great flock of white hair, big teeth, megawatt smile. Anyway, Isaac Stern, this is after the People's Republic of China, communism, had fallen, and now there's Western influences coming into China. And so Isaac Stern was invited to the music conservatories to teach violin. And it wasn't just not an individual lesson. He was actually in these great halls, just exactly like this, and he would be teaching these young people. And as you can imagine, in China, these conservatories had some children that were extraordinarily skilled at this. And I'm watching on this documentary, these are kids like this, and they're playing the violin like, wow, you know, because I paid like $1,000 to teach my son's piano. And he still doesn't even know what room it's in. So Isaac Stern is teaching the violin, and they had never been exposed to Western music, and that doesn't mean American music, that means Western music. So they didn't know Mozart, they didn't know Bach, they didn't know Beethoven. So these little kids had been learning Mozart and Bach and Beethoven, and then there's this poignant scene with a 12-year-old girl, and she's playing this piece, and it's technically perfect. I'm listening to this thing going, oh, Lord. He stops her. Big megawatt smile. That's great. That's great. Now, he said, now I want you to sing it. The translator was thinking, there's got to be confusion here. I don't know what he means, sing it. And then they realized what he meant was, sing it. She puts the violin down in a little 12-year-old voice. She begins liltingly humming the words to this Mozart concerto. And he says, with his hand on her shoulder, yes. Yes, pointing to his heart. Now, I want you to play it that way. She puts the violin back up, and out of her violin came the exact same piece of music, but now from someplace different deep down in her heart. Here's what happens to us when we think about relationships. We think about it as a skill set that we have to solve. And so we become like ill-taught piano students, and we're so worried about the flub that will get us in Dutch, we never hear the music. We only play the right notes. Today wasn't about the right notes. It was the willingness to know that you have a song and you can trust your heart when you walk into relationships, and that the journey may be messy, but the journey is ultimately worth it. And in the mystery is the Spirit. God bless you all. And remember, sometime today, tell somebody you're intimate.